Well, good afternoon. I'm really very pleased to be here today at what I think is a pivotal conference. It's pivotal because the global challenges that we are talking about will affect everyone in this room. And we often, when speaking about intellectual property in forums like this, forget those who are missing from the debate. The farmer in the developing world, the teenager as a music lover in Europe, the Brazilian factory worker, people into whose lives the words intellectual property seldom intrude. Intellectual property rights were first established in the 19th century because they brought wider benefits to society. From the discovery of penicillin, which has saved millions of lives, to the publication of the Harry Potter books, which have enhanced the lives of millions of children, IP rights exist because they give people an incentive to invest, to create, and then to share. IP rights were not set up only for companies to profit from their ideas. They were set up also to ensure that they deliver benefits to all of us. Today, as we enter the 21st century, and despite all of our technological advances, there are critical issues facing all societies: disease, aging populations, how we deal with waste, climate change, which has already been mentioned, energy security, poverty that still blights much of the world as we head to our millennium goals, and of course, crime. And the solutions to many of these challenges will require innovation. Innovation leading to new ideas and technologies that needs to be supported by a functioning intellectual property system. So I guess I stand here as the Minister for Intellectual Property in the United Kingdom, but you know, there isn't another colleague that I might speak to in another nation state who isn't talking about a knowledge economy, or isn't talking about a creative economy, who isn't talking about the importance of education in their own countries. If you believe in all of those things, then it is axiomatic that you believe in the importance of intellectual property. So I want us to work together to build trust and confidence in a global intellectual property system that works for the many, not the few. The challenge for all of our governments is to create a system that meets the needs of all of us in the 21st century. Over the years, we've seen new technologies come and go. In transport, we've moved from horses to canals to rail to air travel, particularly. In communications, we've moved from letters sealed with wax to telephones, to faxes, to Twitter. And in both cases, the rate of change has greatly accelerated. And this can be both scary and confusing for our respective populations. Transport and communications have helped make the world a smaller place. They've enabled us to assemble in Geneva today. We can now share information and ideas more easily than ever before. Our challenge is to make sure that the global intellectual property system is still relevant and works then to the wider benefit of us all in that communication age. And there are a number of common issues facing us, whether we live in Sweden, Suriname, or Senegal. Firstly, disease. We meet at a time when pandemic swine flu has infected over 90,000 people around the world and sadly claimed the lives of 400. This is a stark reminder that no country can isolate itself and that the disease respects no borders. Combating swine flu is preoccupying scientists all over the world. Clearly, just down the road in the WHO, but also back in the UK at Imperial College, where they're working hard to complete a vaccine. We're lucky to have drugs to help us treat this flu developed via scientific research and brought to market by an intellectual property system. What we now need to do is put in place the right incentives so that the intellectual property system can deliver better public health for everyone, rich and poor. That means having a flexible system that can deliver medicines to those who need them. Currently, the intellectual property system incentivizes the development of new drugs where there is a financial return, but it doesn't work so well for diseases affecting developing countries. I'm thinking of malaria, bilharzia, cholera, which still kill millions of people worldwide because the financial incentive is much less. We can and must help tackle these diseases over this next period. And how do we do that? I think we do that by pooling resources and working collaboratively, governments and businesses together to make a difference. That's why we in the UK are working with the WHO on its global strategy, and why I welcome GlaxoSmithKline's announcement earlier this year that it will promote patent pools to help develop new drugs to treat neglected diseases. These pools will help share information and technology. It's a move in the right direction, but we will need to do more. Philanthropy, of course, can play its part, like the work in the Gates Foundation, where the profits derived from one form of intellectual property, software, are then used to promote another part of intellectual property, in this case, access to medicine. Our medical advances of recent years should, of course, then be celebrated. Vaccines mean that diseases which once claimed millions of lives have all been eradicated in the developed world. But in our modern world, people live longer. They live healthier lives than ever before. And that brings with it a whole other set of issues as we head towards an aging population. So how can we make sure that the elderly live in our respective countries in dignity when the working population is increasingly mobile? Again, the intellectual property system can and must make a difference. We need to encourage technologies that can bring people together, and the internet as a tool that equips the 21st century is best place to do that, and we need to make better use of it. In Japan, community currencies like furo kippu underpin an entire system of care for the elderly. What makes this system so powerful is that the basic unit of currency is the hour, not the yen. By helping elderly people in their own communities, volunteers can earn credits and they can transfer that to their elderly parents hundreds of miles away. The system thrives not only because it enables people to exchange useful services, but because of the personal human connection between those who give and receive. The internet then can be more than just a faceless part of the intellectual property system. It can turn online communities into real ones. And there are more people living in our world than ever before, living longer lives and consuming more. But the current global recession teaches us that cheap credit, financial speculation, and endless consumption are not sustainable. If the whole world wished to consume as we do in developed countries, then we would need two planets. So consumption in the future, in a future in which we have an aging population, must be different, more sustainable, better managed, and less wasteful. In the UK, a teenager gets a new phone every 11 months, an adult every 18 months. A total of 50 million phones are replaced each year, and the poorest countries receive the greatest share of electronic waste. The port of Lagos in Nigeria receives over 4 million PCs every year, which are dumped or burned. Again, it's the intellectual property system that can make a difference. IP underpins the development of new technologies, which will be needed to tackle that growing problem of waste. Technologies that will help us recycle and consume more efficiently. Intellectual property also underpins innovative ideas like eBay, which help recycle goods that would otherwise end up as more waste. And now a further unintended consequence of our consumption is our reliance on energy, particularly carbon. Climate change and security of energy supply are also issues that respect no borders. The IP system which supports the development of new technologies will be critical in delivering a global solution, a solution where technology and knowledge are shared. The transfer of technology then must play a key part in tackling climate change. Firstly, by allowing poorer countries to access existing technologies like solar power and fuel cells. And secondly, by encouraging further innovation so that existing technologies can be developed and improved. Technology transfer then will be a key element to a global climate change deal, which I hope will be agreed as part of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change in Copenhagen this December. I want to see the developed countries working together to deliver change amongst the poorest. But it's not just a question of getting hold of green technology from, for example, increased licensing. We also need to build capacity, particularly, so that poorer countries can develop their own knowledge and skills base to help them be ahead in this accelerated age. I want the UK to take a lead in promoting these ideas, and we've already started to think about what types of incentives might be used. With China, we will develop model agreements for collaboration on research and development projects to make sure that the benefits of cross-border collaboration are shared as well as protected. We also favour pooling patents to help companies from developed and developing countries build on the benefits of each other's technologies. We'd like more countries, frankly, to introduce a license of right system, which will reduce fees for patent holders if they make their technology available to anyone requesting a license. These are the sorts of ideas that the UK wants to discuss with other countries in the run-up to Copenhagen. But in the meantime, the UK has also begun to take some immediate and practical steps. We know that there is a large global patents backlog. Prioritizing and processing those patents, which could have the biggest impact in tackling, say, climate change, must be a sensible way forward. That's why I announced in March that patents for green technologies would be fast-tracked in the UK, helping to reduce the amount of time it takes to get an idea to the marketplace. And I'm very pleased to hear that other countries are considering implementing similar systems. On climate change, the global IP system must be part of the solution then, not the problem. Sadly, the effects of climate change are felt most acutely in those countries least able to manage them. Small island states have the most to fear, clearly, from rising sea levels, but have scarce financial resources to deal with it. And that's why it's the responsibilities of all of us to tackle the root causes of climate change. We must make sure that the very poorest in our societies are able to benefit from the new ideas and technology. We must also need an IP framework that meets the needs of the rural poor, as well as the urban elite, and which gives marginalized groups, like the homeless, a stake in new ideas and technology. A global IP system, then, needs to work for everyone, rich and poor. I believe that intellectual property can help economic growth and development. Let's just take one example, the telephone. Changes in technology have substantially reduced the cost of making a phone call. The mobile phone has done more to connect rural and poor communities than any other invention since the wheel. The internet also offers unrivaled opportunities for access to education, a key element in lifting communities out of poverty. Tackling poverty and promoting economic development helps give then communities a stake in their own future and legitimizes the role of government. When communities break down, crime and addiction can take over, and problems of criminality and enforcement particularly end up, again, not respecting global boundaries. This is particularly true of intellectual property crime, where we need an ever more sophisticated way to solve the problem. Building capacity then in poorer countries to combat intellectual property crime is not just in the interests of richer nations. Ultimately, it's in the interests of all of us. And building capacity in developing countries is more than just technology and gadgets. It's about ideas and brands. That's why the UK launched a commission on intellectual property and development in 2002 and looked at areas like health, trade, agriculture, and traditional knowledge. And that's why the UK has supported projects to help producers in sub-Saharan Africa brand and market their products to get a return on their goods. In partnership with the Ethiopian Intellectual Property Office, one project looked at helping Ethiopian growers and coffee workers capture a greater share of the retail price that coffee earns in foreign markets. This project helped growers secure trademarks for their coffee in over 30 countries in the world, which got them a better economic return in the end for their coffee. Despite these examples, at times it feels and seems like our IP framework exists only to benefit the wealthy, and I want to change that. We need to fix the global IP system. Doing nothing is not an option. I want an IP system that works for all countries, rich and poor. But fixing the intellectual property system alone is not enough. We will need a global package on trade and development that works. The UK wants a global trade framework that fosters open and fair markets. The UK wants a global trade framework that is open so that countries have the same access to technology, finance, and know-how as others. Fair in terms of trading systems that lift people out of poverty. That's why the commitments made at the G20 London summit need to be followed through with action, and that's why concluding the Doha development round remains the top UK priority on trade. If intellectual property is going to tackle these wider challenges, the system needs to work. And yet many people seem to think that the current status quo is good enough. I don't agree. On copyright, people genuinely don't understand the rules. Too often, we talk about intellectual property in the context of telling someone not to do things that they would like to do. So we're told, stop listening to music or performing it in a particular way. Stop enjoying films in a particular way or watching TV shows. Up to a point, of course, that's right. But if you want to stay within the law, IP can be seen as a means of stopping you doing things. And one of the reasons is that the system is seen as complicated and frustrating to use. That needs addressing. A teenager shouldn't have to be an IP expert to know whether they're operating within or outside the law. And IP needs to be easier to understand and relevant to. And that's why I launched a copyright review in the UK. And the global patent system is also cracking under the strain. When I talk to people outside the intellectual property world and tell them about the worldwide backlog of several million patent applications waiting to be processed, they're horrified. They can't conceive of waiting 7 years for their passport or a driver's license. Yet we're prepared to have backlogs that can go on that long. That's why I've pushed for greater work sharing by patent examiners in different national patent offices to tackle that global backlog. And the IP system needs to respond to specific needs. That's why I support the initiatives that WIPO is doing in this area, like increasing access to copyright material for visually impaired people. Hugely important if we are to win that debate on the integrity of the system. And I want to see greater public understanding and trust in the IP system. I want to show the person in the street that the system works in their interests. It keeps them employed, healthy, and able to communicate. That is the spirit, it seems to me, of this conference, looking at the wider challenges we face and seeing how intellectual property can help solve them. Fixing the intellectual property system, then, cannot just be left to lawyers and intellectual property experts. That was the domain of the 20th century. The 21st century, it's clear that this is now too important. The system must adapt to an ever-increasing change that has so far characterized this first period of the 21st century. These first years, dominated by energy, climate change, a credit crunch, global issues around terrorism, all of them requiring IP solutions. We need a global framework that can facilitate this change rather than block or delay it. And that's why I firmly support the work that Francis Gurry and his team are doing to strategically realign WIPO. And there is a lot for us to do as we support that work. So I call on policymakers and officials from all countries to be open-minded and flexible, to learn from experience and look at ways at how we can be part of the solution. We need to build trust with each other as well as within the system. We cannot afford to fail. I'd like to leave with one final thought. I've talked much today about the role of government, particularly in fixing the system and making sure that IP can help solve some of these global challenges. But whereas the major problems of the last century were tackled by big government or big business, the challenges of this century will require the mobilization of millions of people to change behavior, shape their own environments, and help one another. Getting the global IP system right so that it can deliver this change in behavior is the greatest challenge we face in our discussions over the next few days. It's hugely important that we position intellectual property as the cornerstone of a knowledge-based society, of knowledge transfer, of technology, and of innovation. That's why this conference is so important. And that's why this great institution that was set up by the world to deal with these global important issues is more important now than it's ever been before. Thank you.